Hello, and welcome. I'm William Morgan, and this is 42 Minutes, a production of SyncBook Radio and distributed by thesyncbook.com. You can find us online at 42minutes.com, and you can reach us by sending a message to mail at 42minutes.com. You can also follow our tweets at Sync42 and at SyncBook. This is the interview I did with Peg Carter. You can find more information about her by reading SyncBook 1 or listening to episode number 28. She is a rebel if ever there was one. Today is the 6th day of July, 2015. This is Renegade, episode 3, recorded June 24th.
Been rough, you know, up and down, but I'm okay. I feel pretty good. I'm enjoying the good weather for a change.
Well, it's funny you would ask about Jade, because really the only change in Colorado lately, what I'm talking about is Jade Helm. The only real difference in Colorado lately is that it won't quit raining. It's like this weird thing's going on where it's like unnaturally wet this season. And it's kind of disturbing because it won't stop. And then they'll like predict no rain and then it will rain again.
We had that over here. They had, they kept predicting rain and it never came. We had the opposite. We had too much dryness. And then finally the dryness broke. But we've had unusually cool weather, very cool weather, and so it's been very comfortable. Finally, it's very temperate, but it's totally unusual. Yeah, it's just very strange weather. The air seems very clean. There's a lot of wind, so definitely something's going on with the planet Earth. I'm not sure what it is, but.
All right, so hold on for just a second. Okay, so look, I want to like not do like an official 42 minutes with you, but why don't we talk a little bit, because like I'm really kind of like fucked up about everything that's been going on, and I like actually look forward to seeing your perspective on stuff sometimes, because it always just, it pulls me out of my headspace. Does that make sense?
Yeah, I was thinking today a little about that. I have a friend who's not, she's not interested in politics much. She understands some of the stuff I'm into, but we have a different, our friendship is based around the neighborhood and art, selling art and stuff like that. But she was saying that this person she knew was very neurotic and, just was the kind of person that had a lot of her physical needs taken care of. And she was, she had a lot of time on her hands, and so it sort of got filled up with neurosis, just worry. And, so I was thinking that it could work like that, where if you are focusing on a purpose and you have a purpose in life, that it kind of can push other things out that are kind of static-y, something like that. I guess it's it's having to answer the criticism saying, oh, you're just into that because of, you wouldn't have anything else to do if you weren't, or you're just into that because you have emotional problems, or you have, you can't deal with your life, so this distracts you. So instead of thinking of it as a positive thing, it distracts you. You know, I mean, people go to baseball games. It distracts them, but no one ever, you know, hardly ever says it finds fault for that. So,
no, all of it's a distraction. I mean, like, I watch a lot of – it is. Movies are a distraction, right? Movies are such a distraction. Yeah. Entertainment's a distraction. Like, all of it is just entertainment. It's just all supposed to – but it's weird because, like, people think the entertainment is more real than what is actually happening. Like, the hamburger that you see on the movie screen is more real than the actual hamburger or whatever. Like, everybody always says, this doesn't look like the picture. Do you know what I mean? Like, there's something there. But
yeah, it's funny. It reminds me of this hypnosis, you know. I guess it was something I saw where there was a person brought up on stage and they were hypnotized. And the magician gave him an onion and told him it was an apple. And they ate it in front of the audience. They're going, great apple.
Oh, my God. So, I mean, well, okay, the big topic, because I grew up in Alabama, and I kind of believe, like, you know, the South was evil and that the rebel flag was, like, a bad thing. But it took my wife, like, one time I was talking to my wife and I said something like the Civil War was about slavery. She's like, no, it wasn't. It was about states' rights. And it blew my mind. I mean, she's like a history teacher. And then I realized, like, it was like the movies had molded my perception of what actually happened in the Civil War. But the movies weren't really real. It was almost like the perpetration of, like, or it was like the Santa Claus movies. Like, Santa Claus movies or Christmas movies that we see, like, every year, like, make the next generation of kids believe in Santa Claus. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah.
Movies do have an effect on people.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But what do you think of – okay, so the Charleston shit. I watched some of the videos that you had put up. Where are you at? What was the most interesting thing you found?
Well, it was just the thing that's interesting to me is that they have the, you know, whoever is organizing these hoaxes just have the balls to keep doing it, and people keep falling for it. And I just finally started laughing about it. I started thinking it was funny, and so I have a different perspective. It's less stressful as well to think of it that way. And I was very I was influenced by reading Miles Mathis. I found his material just recently and I haven't read it all, but the pieces that I wrote, that I read, just had a tremendous influence on me, and I couldn't stop reading. Some of them are maybe 80, 90 pages long, and I just couldn't stop reading. I was completely transfixed, and I was just relieved, too, in a way. It brought me an uplifting feeling. And I think I remember one thing my guru taught me. I had a guru, was that you can tell if something is right by how it makes you feel. Like, if it increases your energy or makes you feel better, okay, then you can say that it was a good thing. And I just got so much out of this. And I think it was because I struggle on this research, and this man is brilliant in his ability to observe and to put together a plausible scenario or story of what really happened rather than what you're told, you know, the propaganda story, and also uses forensics. He's a painter, so his observation of people's faces has been developed because he draws portraits that are very lifelike. And so he does photo analysis, which is one of the things that I'm really fascinated with, is bloopers, you know, like continuity errors in movies.
Yeah.
And, you know, falsification of photography. probably know that already. I'm interested in falsification of history.
Yeah.
And because of that, I have an interest in that. And he's just really good at it. And just blew my mind at least three times, at least with, so far I've read his article on Lincoln and the article on the Tate murders with Manson and the one about John Lennon. The one on John Lennon just had me just laughing. I was just so happy. And even with a lot of rough things going on in my life right now, I took a comfort in learning all this stuff because it's just so mind-blowing, and it's also kind of, I didn't go through my whole life believing all this bullshit. I got to the point where I really got to see what, some glimmer of what, was really behind the scenes kind of thing. So that's all. It was a good thing.
That kind of sparks
some thoughts
in me. That's cool. Like I've heard of like emotions, like how things make you feel, as emotions being kind of like a fuel gauge, with joy being at one end and then like things like hate being at the other end. And then you can judge how you should react to something based on where it hits in that gauge. But they also talk about like emotional pivots, where it's like if you stump your toe and it puts you like at the bottom where you're like all pissed off and hate, then you like try to change it or like recreate what it means to you. Do you know what I mean? Like, so instead of it like pissing you off, you're like, okay, I stumped my toe because I wasn't paying attention and it's just trying to teach me that I need to pay more attention. And then you'll start to feel better about it. Do you know what I mean?
That is a good thing. Yeah, there's ways to manage, to manage your mood. But I think some of the reason that I'm putting an emphasis on the fact of how these things or these latest things that I've been reading and learning make me feel better is because the material itself is so difficult. And being somebody who's really spends a lot of time studying and researching these different large state crimes, it's very hard because there's very few people that care about that and who you can speak with. So it's kind of, it can be stressful. And so I'm not saying that everyone should just follow whatever feels good, do it kind of thing. I'm just saying that I'm just talking personally about my own experience lately. So and one of the things that that Miles Mathis wrote, which I enjoyed, he wrote a short piece on one of these what's her name, because I know a lot of people something thinking about her, but anyway, one of these starlets. And he said that it's talking about hate and love, that it's okay, or it's natural, or it's actually part of love to hate, because only by loving something very strongly do you hate that which hurts it or hate that which destroys it. And so that those two things were linked.
Oh.
In other words, if you only love everything, it's not really love in a sense, because I guess on one level you can love, there's probably not the right vocabulary to talk about these things because we only have one word for love. There's probably more distinctions or shades, nuances. Anyway, I enjoyed that because there's so much pressure on people to always be happy or always be full of love or to love everyone. Anyway, I've always, I've had issue with it, and some of it is my very much involvement with New Age groups and New Age people, with the ashram and the yoga people I was involved with. It's a very strong, almost prescriptive thing that, everything is love, which is good. I guess on one end that's good, but if you have to like love everything, I think it's not balanced. anyway, that's all.
Well, you know, it makes a lot of sense to me. Like I've been thinking a lot about this whole situation, especially like the one in Charleston and like the Red Eye situation and about Hitler being a hero and things of that nature. I mean, I learned a long time ago, or I had that insight about bad being, when you talk about like the yoga people and stuff, I immediately think of Jake Katza, like as far as like synchromysticism goes. And I always turned everything into like joy. Do you know what I mean? By like the number 42. And,
yeah.
And then like
I enjoy it, but I can't.
It's kind of annoying at the same time, right? It's like a Hare Krishna coming up into you and like trying to sell you a flower. You're like, get out of here, man. Right? But it's true. Like I always think about like Hitler's birthday being 42. And how somehow that relates to joy. And then the word bad having the bad is 2, 1, 4. So it's the like bad is good and good is bad. Like you can be. And then that like,
yeah,
you know what I'm saying then?
I really enjoy Kurtz, however you pronounce his name. I enjoy his work. And I really liked his videos. They're very impressive. And they're very, they're full of gnosis. They're full of knowledge. And I don't think he does many videos now. I don't follow much what he does now. But I enjoy him because in the yoga circles I was in, there was that notion of this bhakti. I've actually written about this before quite a while ago about him, but it's this idea that the bhakta, the one who's filled with love, that's a complete path in itself. It has no necessity for anything else. And there's kind of this rivalry between the yoni, the knowledge, the people that are into knowledge and learning, and the people that are just bhakta, that are just into love and devotion. And I guess each feels like maybe there's some kind of competition there between the two. And it is in the scriptures, in the Hindu scriptures, that both paths are encompassed with each other. So ultimately there's no difference in the path. Each path contains the other. But anyway, I can't really comment on you know, what he says on politics, because his basic thing is just that he doesn't want to get involved because he feels it's the same story over and over and he finds it redundant and just negativity.
Right.
But I don't know, you know, so I take that for face value. So
this is milesmathis.com. Is that right? I got something. Is that not? Oh wait, Miles Mathis conspiracy theories. Like also try.
There's something where he says updates, because he writes on art subjects and he writes on other subjects, science. He writes
like
on science.
Physics. I got stuff on him on like physics and mathematics and stuff like that.
Right.
Wow.
But the one that has this stuff on politics and history and these. These staged events is called updates.
Okay.
He has less list of updates, and the one on the JFK is very good too. That was the first one I read.
I like.
And I wanted actually to show it to Alan Green because he talks about the king and he talks about Camelot. I think that's in the title of the piece of the article. The King of Camelot or something, but he makes a good argument a narrative around that fits the facts, that fits the data, and something that no one really has ever brought up much before. I know that he wrote this one about Kennedy quite a long time ago, maybe 5 years ago, I think he said he wrote. but he never published it until recently, because there's been so much coming out about this falsification of events and these staged events, and it's become more of a something that people write and talk about, and it's not like he would be the only one out there writing the article. He puts the article out there, and he's the only one. So he did write it a while before he put it out, and I'm not even sure when he actually put it up. But I know people have been reading it that I correspond with just in the past 3 to 6 months, I think. At least for me. I just started it recently, and it affected me very deeply. It made me happy. It did make me happy.
See, now sometimes you confuse the shit out of me, woman. I got to be honest with you, because I mean, sometimes people who are like head deep in conspiracy theory and stuff like that are very like sad and secluded people, but you can't stop laughing.
I think that I don't really fit in any one group, and I'm thinking about this and why exactly that is. And there's a recent podcast by Jan Erwin. It's, I think, the one that just came out. It might be something like, I don't know what the number is, but it's about the social engineering and cultural engineering by means of music and vibration. It's very good. And in that, they talk about how these different demographics are created, and they're deliberately created by the cultural conditioning. And then, you know, people belong to these different demographics, and, you know, what the upshot of that is, what the advantage is of that system to the people who are, you know, manipulating the culture. And in that, I realized that there was a reason that I didn't fit in a particular group, that I was always on the edge, even though I was on the edge of the group. I was always never quite a member of the group. And some of it might have to do with that I don't. I don't.
You have no demographic. You have no demographic.
Yeah. Yeah. And this man, his name is Fred Yee, and he's a Taoist meditator, and he came and did a wonderful meeting at our at my place. There was an event in my community called Bushwick Open Art Studio, where the whole neighborhood opens up to the public to have them come and look at different art studios. And so he had said to me too that he felt that I was explaining to him how I don't really belong to any group, it seems. You know, it never really seemed like I could be a member of a group. And he goes, oh my God, because there is an occult group in our neighborhood that I started to try to join and become involved with, and I basically got pushed out from that group too. And so he said, well, you know, you're just even the groups that are very marginal, you're like on the outside of those groups.
Even the liminal, you're liminal.
You know, just how it happened or whatever, how it arose. Probably
like the shaman.
it has to be that way for me to do the kind of work that I do with my reading and my writing and my research. You know, I have to be that way in some way.
You have to be on the edge. It's like the shaman who has to be on the like edge of town. Like the shaman couldn't be in the middle of town. He had to be on the outskirts.
Hello?
Can you hear me? Peg, can you hear me? Did I lose you?
I'm not sure if I lost you.
Can you hear me now? Hey, Peg. All right. Testing.
Yeah, the call might have dropped. I don't know what happened.
Oh, no, I could hear you. I could hear you, like, saying hello and stuff, and I was trying to talk to you.
So, I don't know what happened.
No, I was saying something like, it's like I remember hearing, like, Terrence McKenna or something talk about the shaman and how the shaman's always on, like, the outskirts of town or whatever. But, like, the benefits of being on the outskirts of town is you can always tell everybody what's coming. Do you know what I mean? Like, that was the reason why.
Oh.
You get what I'm saying? Like, for some reason, like, the individuals like you bring health to the situation so everybody doesn't get, like, caught up in their own bullshit. Do you know what I mean?
There is something to that. I think I believe that being... like there could be sort of called varietal human forms, and there's certain people that are of a certain varietal human form, and you know, they're just different, and that it could be that, you know, the species is that there's an intelligence that guides creation, that guides nature. So there's a you know, there's a way in which there's a perfection inherent in things. So that could be that there are people that are, I think that Terrence McKenna did talk about that. There are people who are, like in our tradition, in my tradition of yoga, they were called, you know, called Siddha. And they were also people that they also called, sometimes they're called avidutes, which means that they didn't have anything to do with society. They kind of wander around in, like, their own internal state. And there's all kind of stories about these type of people or whatever. But, I mean, I think in a sense that they, with what I do with my research and everything, or reading and learning or thinking and turning things over, it's kind of a more like a research activity or just a you know, investigation, etc. But it's not socially acceptable because it's so politically charged. So I don't know if it's I don't really think I don't feel I'm spiritually alien to the society or to anyone, really. I just feel that it's the things that I'm uncovering, that I'm studying, that create this charge. And it really is there. It's not, you know, it could be that could create me to have this sort of not fitting in. I mean, it's just logical.
Well, do you ever feel panicked or, like, pessimistic about anything?
Well, the thing that that always made me wonder was that why I wasn't more afraid than I am, that I should be more. And so that was kind of weird. Like, I always think, like, logically, I should be more afraid than I am. And then the other is that I guess the feeling of the Shakti, what you might call synchronicity, because those two things are the same in a way. I met some people from my yoga days on a train recently. I knew them. We were very, you know, knew each other pretty well in that neighborhood. And I explained to them about synchronicity, and they had also participated in the group when our guru was alive. And there was a tremendous amount of synchronicity around him. He was like a, he was a synchronicity attractor, and everybody experienced synchronicity around him because he just seemed to cause it to happen more often. It was a content. And so people thought of it as the Shakti or the teaching or whatever of the guru. They didn't think of it as something. They knew it's an all pervasive in nature, but it's especially happening around the guru, so they connected it with him. So I said they agreed with me completely. They said, yeah, that's exactly the same as the Shakti. That's what it is. And so because of that, I think I have this, like, more like a resilience I think that's some of why I can tolerate studying things that other people can't tolerate, even talking about or hearing about. Like certain things, if I start to talk about them, I can see that, you know, people get really distressed or really agitated. So I'm like a carrier.
Wow.
But yeah, there was this like a cult in the arts convention that I went to, and they were talking about these things called, they're like UFOs. It was a talk, it was an auditorium, there was a large number of people, and they were talking about these UFO, I forget what they're called, but they're like little pieces of light that are flat, that flash around. And so at the end I said, well, in the 9/11, you know, there was a lot of collected pictures showing these
flashing
these things, you know, flying around. But right around the time that our group was broken apart, a lot of things were taken down from the YouTube at the same time, and all those, you know, were taken down. And just nobody really cared much what I was talking about. You know, they're talking about UFOs. I'm talking about 9/11, you know. But afterwards, two different people came up and said, I've always wanted to talk to someone about 9/11. You know, they never found anyone they could talk to about it, but they'd always thought that maybe they'd always had their suspicions or whatever. And they wanted to talk about it. So then I just, you know, said a few things. I didn't say anything much. And they just, like, turned white or whatever. You know, they just almost, like, start to vomit or something. And then all of a sudden I get really scared, you know, like I'm not even upset or anything, but then when I see how they react, like they're
you're
just like,
oh shit, this is deeper than I thought.
Yeah, and then I go, what? And then I start feeling that pain, and then I panic. Yeah. Then I start feeling sick, right? You know, this feedback mechanism or whatever. So you can just imagine if all this stuff got let loose in the culture at large, what would happen? I think all the shit would break loose in a way, because there's so much energy tied up in these lies or these repressions. And I think that could be even some of how some of it's kept quiet, is people that do know about it, they realize that it can't really be let out because it would create too much havoc or something. I don't really know, but it just seems to me that there's a lot of energy.
That's so refreshing,
though. Just tied up in it.
Just hearing you talk about it is like a refreshing feeling. It gives like a bodily charge. It's cool because it's like, yeah. I mean, that's how I think about sync sometimes. Because I learned that when I was like watching Andras Jones's like whole category of movies, and it all kept coming up. It kept coming up with like. JFK kept coming up with all of this because he's in Nightmare on Elm Street, right? And JFK it's the Nightmare on Elm Street. And then he was in Saved by the Bell, which takes place in like John F. Kennedy's school or whatever, like that's the name of the school. But anyways, it kept having these reoccurring themes of JFK. And I was like, they were so minute that they were almost like mundane, right? But if you added them all up together, it was like, oh, wait a minute. He had like a theme, but that's impossible. Like nobody, like I could see, you know, all of like Christopher Nolan's movies or whatever, blah, 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 blah. They having like these hidden messages and secrets and shit in them. But all of Andras Jones's movies, come on, that's ridiculous. Do you know what I mean? But it's like, it's so like the more that secrets are repressed into the subconscious, the more they come through the fiction because they come from the same place. Do you know what I mean? It's like they have to. So like the universe has to get rid of all of its like freaking suppressed baggage. It has to get rid of like it knows all of the secrets. And so any place where creativity like dives, I mean, lies and fiction are the same thing, right? So anytime you try to create a fiction, you're digging out of the same place where all the lies are hidden. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So it's like this feedback loop where fiction are lies and lies are fiction and it, but like just hearing the way that you like you assimilate all of it gives me these chills because it makes so much sense. Like that's how it, but before we go any further, Peg, I gotta know, you ever seen a UFO before?
Yes.
Tell me. I want to hear about it.
When I was, before I got married, I was living in San Francisco, and the house where I stayed in was on a place called Skyline Boulevard, and I think there was even a movie made out of it about this street. It's called Skyline.
Well, and there was a movie about aliens. It was like a mixture between the rap. I think it took place in L.A., though, but it was like everybody gets zapped up in these beams like the Rapture, and it was called Skyline. But go ahead.
And the street runs right along the San Andreas Fault where it goes into the ocean. So where I lived on the hill, if you go down the hill, as you go down the hill, very steep, at some point the San Andreas Fault goes right into the ocean right there. And it was a place called Daly City, D-A-L-Y City. So I was driving my car home, and I was going up a hill, and I saw this thing in the sky, and it was, it looked like it was tumbling. It's just the strangest thing, because it was, first, you know, I thought maybe it's a helicopter, but it's tumbling, it's spinning, and it's got, it's, I can't describe it, how it looked, but it was like metallic, and it looked like it was burning like when manganese burns, it's green. And so I learned that whatever in physics class, but it had these like weird colors, like it was burning and it was spinning, but it was hovering at one point. It wasn't like flying past. It was
so
hovering,
it wasn't like a meteor or something like that was falling, because it actually had like some kind of movement where it stopped itself or something.
Yeah, it wasn't a normal trajectory of something that was falling from the sky. It was tumbling, it was twisting, but it wasn't falling in a straight line down like a normal heavy object would. It was kind of it was floating or something. It was like I felt as though it was falling, but it wasn't falling right in front of me. It was twisting and moving and like that, up, you know, above. And I don't remember I think I was driving or whatever, and I didn't see where it went per se. I think it went probably over toward the ocean, but I turned on the radio and a lot of people saw it. It was everyone was calling in the radio, and they said that it fell into the ocean near the Golden Gate Bridge. Bridge hits on the north side, which is like Sausalito, like off the water there. I can't remember what the name of the place on the water side is, but they said it fell in the water there.
Okay. And, I want to ask you a weird question now. There like seismic activity within like the next month? Do you remember? If there was like a weird...
I don't remember that specifically. No, I don't remember that. I don't think there certainly wasn't anything large, like any large activity.
All right. So, how much activity have you ever experienced in living in San Francisco and whatever?
When I was, I think in 1973 or four, when I was in high school, it was. I spent the night at a girlfriend's house, and she lived whatever street, Hillcrest, and for some reason that night, there was school the next day, we decided we didn't go to sleep. And we had friends over, and this like never happened before, never happened since. It was just that night. She had invited some people over from a couple, I don't know, maybe a half a block down. Her mom was asleep upstairs. She didn't know we were all awake. You know, we were playing cards. We were just staying up late and playing cards. And so in the middle of the night, or almost very late in the early the next morning, was when this big earthquake hit. And so we were all together, and we, run in the doorway, whatever. And she had a pool you could see in the back, and the pool was like, shh, 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 you know. And her mother comes down and goes, you know, what's going on, whatever. And so that was it. So that was odd. You know, it was just an odd thing that we decided not to go to sleep that night for some reason. And we were up we were awake when it happened. I don't know why that happened, but wow. That was one thing that happened. That was all. But I was not in any big earthquake other than that one. So
I don't know. We were talking, there was a tornado warning today at work, and tornadoes aren't usual in Denver, especially the metro area where I'm at. They're usually out east, if they're ever. And I started, you know, some people, all of our phones went off at the same time. Like, all of our phones were hooked into, like, weather warnings. So everybody was, like, picking up their phone and saying, oh, shit, tornado at the same time. And it said something like, take cover immediately. But I don't think any of these dudes have ever been in a tornado. I grew up in Alabama. Tornadoes were, like, we had tornado drills all the time, so forth, whatever, blah, 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 blah. But we started talking about the things that scare us the most, whether it be, like, you know, a plane crash or whatever. And I often think about earthquakes, man. Earthquakes scare the shit out of me because I figure if I ever felt an earthquake, the immediate thought in my head would be, this is it. This is the one. Like, this is, like, the end of the world. Do you know what I mean? So we went and watched San Andreas the other day and the whole earthquake thing or whatever, but it's just been on my mind. But I also read, like, a lot of John Keel, and I read, like, a lot of Michael Persinger, and they say that UFOs are connected to earthquakes. Like, UFO sightings go up before earthquakes. That's why I asked you that. When I was...
Wow.
Yeah, when I was studying like this weird UFO flap up in Illinois one time, because I used to wake up every morning and check, like, the UFO. I had a number of UFO places where people would report sightings, and I would, like, try to categorize trends and stuff, and all these people were experiencing this shit in Illinois, and then they started hearing these booms, like these sonic booms. And then, like, the very next thing, the next day, I woke up and it was like my whole feed that I was, like, into. I had all of these people who had experienced UFOs and who had experienced booms, I had found on social media. And so I had kept them in tabs, like, I was seeing what they were experiencing. And then I woke up one morning and all of them were experiencing, like, earthquake. Oh, shit, I felt that earthquake. But none of them made the connection between the two. Do you know what I mean? So I wonder, because, like, there's this connection. There's this weird connection, like, Bigfoot sightings go up, Mothman sightings go up, you know, weird cryptozoological, like, creatures go up, UFOs go up, and then there's usually, like, an earthquake. And so there's this whole theory on whether or not it has something to do with electromagnetism and, like, tapping into certain areas of people's brains and shit and so forth and so on.
Yeah, that's very interesting. Have you ever heard of Charles Fort? Probably.
Yes.
Have, right?
Yeah.
And you can get his books. I haven't read it cover to cover, but I've read some of it. It was like a free download about it, but they do happen. Or because people don't believe they happen, then they don't really happen, or they don't officially happen.
Yeah,
they like, they do happen, but since it doesn't register with anyone, they don't actually observe it because they don't believe in it. They don't believe it could happen, or they don't believe it's happening. So anyway, it's not accepted that such a thing ever happens. So he would catalog these, and I think it's I think he's real. I think some people take him as a joke and think it's funny, and, you know, think it's just one of, like, weird science thing, you know, to be a 14 or follow his thing. But they noticed certain correlations, or he had reports that showed correlations between, I don't know, these certain kind of rocks and and lightning.
Rocks falling, rocks falling from the sky and being wedged. Mm-hmm. Because I read the book and he said there was, they called them axe wedges or something like that. Like, the lightning would strike a tree, and then they would open up the tree, and there would be, like, a rock or a stone that was actually in the tree. Yeah, I know what you're talking about. And then that's where Michael Persinger, this was the book he wrote, was something about transient events, because, like, okay, so Like in Denver, it would rain a certain amount of time every year, but it would never rain frogs. So you couldn't really categorize like the raining of frogs. Well, so Charles Fort was categorizing all of these events that were transient that didn't happen at regular intervals. And then Michael Purslinger took all of these events, plus the ones from like John Keel and stuff like that, and he put them into a freaking computer and he spit it out. And then that's when he realized that all of these events were happening right before earthquakes or whatever. So, I mean, we're talking about the same thing. It's so weird that you mentioned Charles Fort right there. I mean, what was your, like, motivation by talking about those? I didn't mean to interrupt you. What was it like? Where were you going with the whole the tree thing?
Well, you were bringing up your interest in how these earthquakes and these UFO sightings are somehow connected. So for that, it just reminded me of Charles Fort. I'm not sure why.
That's why. There's a connection. There's a total connection. That's fucking awesome. There's a total connection. Like, he took Charles, because Charles Fort just, like, he freaking, if I remember correctly, because we did some research on 42 Minutes for this, like, what Charles Fort did was he inherited a whole bunch of money. So he didn't have to really, like, go to work to support himself, and he just went to, like, the New York. He would go, like, at the minute that the library opened, and he would be there till close, just reading, like, scientific, like, what are they called? Where they put out updates on the new science of the time or whatever. Like, these record books. He would just sit there and read the record books. And so it would be, like, rain, frogs falling from the plant. And that happened, too. When I was watching Illinois, it was weird because when the sonic booms happened, there would be the sound of rocks falling on. People thought it was debris. They were like, I thought something exploded in the sky, my window shook, and then I felt rocks hit the roof. And he thought that it was like an electromagnetic charge that was building up that was like levitating the rocks is what Michael Purslinger said. It's crazy.
Oh,
it's crazy.
Yeah, I see what you're saying.
It's crazy because it's all linked somehow. Like, it's funny that you kept mentioning, was it Shakti? If I remember correctly, Shakti is like the mother aspect of Earth or whatever. And for some reason, synchronicity and the way what we call synchronicity, the great divine mother or whatever, it seems to come from that source. Like, it seems to come from this, it's intuitional, because, like, synchronicity all has to do with intuition, right? I mean, wouldn't you agree? Like, you kind of, you get, like, a gut instinct about something having to do with something else, and then, like, it's confirmed?
Yes.
I mean,
I also feel like all of language is a kind of telepathy. People don't realize that, you know, Terence McKenna said that, I don't know, but it just seems like there's a mystery in language, and most people take it for granted because it's so common, but that there's really a very special mystery, and the mystery of language is also tied up with the, you know, the mystery of the letters, the letters of the alphabet, and the sounds of the different letters. And even the Kabbalism or whatever, where the letters are associated with the numbers. And then you have the whole kind of living, you know, the different numbers are almost living things. And so anyway, this idea that the letters have a potency is tied up with, in the Hindu system I was in, the goddess was Shakti, and that's energy. And I'm reading a lot of things on energy lately, just as a digression, which almost come from that point of view that all energy is kind of connected to itself, and there is a kind of consciousness that's in the energy. That's why they call the Shakti has an intelligence. It acts with intelligence. It's not dead. It's an alive thing. So anyway, they talk about these Shakti, there's many kinds of Shakti that do different functions, like your body has different functions that go on without you being aware of it, like you blink your eyes, you digest your food, your blood circulates, your heart is beating. And so there's a certain energy, this intelligent energy that's running it, that's, you know, sustaining it in its functioning, as well as, you know, like probably the energy of the force behind it that you're not aware of, but it somehow does everything perfectly in the body. You know, you don't have to think about your food digesting, but it does. So the Shakti has different functions, and then they have different names for it depending on what the different functions are. And one of the names of the Shakti, or the great goddess, is the Matrika, which is the garland of letters, because she is the string that holds all the letters. And you take the letters and you string them in a certain pattern and you get a certain result. You know, you get a certain word, message, sound, creation. So anyway, they call her the goddess of the letters. And I think in the Norse religion, they have Odin is kind of like a god of the letters. He's kind of like, I think, upside down on a tree, and I think they're trying to kill him, and he has a vision, and he actually creates all the letters, which I don't really understand. But the tree of life, I guess, would be the tree that he's hanging on, I guess, would be like the spinal column of the human, like the tree of life, with the different centers, like the Kabbalistic tree of life as well. So anyway, I think it doesn't have to be male or female, but they, you know, conventionalize it as being female. The energy for the Hindus is conventionalized as female for whatever reason.
No. There's something there. My brain's like on fire right now because like I think of like the strength card or the lust card in tarot. And how there's like this interplay of like soul and matter or whatever. There's like this strength card kind of symbolizes like the soul's animation of matter. Do you know what I mean? Like the soul is true power, and the soul is like the connection with everything. But then there's this like patriotical demand that we have to be separated through matter. Do you know what I mean? And there's this real confusion of the feminine and the masculine to me.
I don't know. I know Jason Barrera. Is that his name?
Barrera.
I think it's Ellis.
Yeah.
I was very influenced by his writing. And I know that he believes in this, you know, this issue of the female being the center, or the death of the female being the center, like metaphor of creation, which is, I think it has something to be said for it, that the soul is lost and in this world. And so I think it has its resonance. I think it has its potency, you know, that narrative. But I just, I think some of, for me, as being female gendered, I feel like it's, you know, some of it to me is like, well, that's a male point of view. And I think in the Kabbalistic world, that it's mostly, I guess most Kabbalists are males. I mean, face it, you know.
Right. It's like illegal. Like in the true religion, it's like illegal for a woman to like actually study it or whatever. But I think I think the women have like the advantage of not having to discover it to a certain extent. There's like a certain amount of like women's intuition. Women know without knowing how they know. And like you said, I'm so fucking glad you said that about a language, because I've thought that about that for a long time. For fucking years, I've thought about this fact that somehow a baby knows more of what you're getting at without knowing the actual words. Do you know what I mean? Like, they know the emotion of what you're saying. There's got to be some kind of, like, there's got to be some kind of telepathy going on with a child before a certain year. Like I think it slowly fades or something, but I think telepathy is like how a child develops language.
I think I wasn't clear what I was trying to say. What I meant was ordinary language that people use every day, like what we're doing right now,
right,
is actually a form of telepathy.
Yes.
Because there's nothing in the word that means anything. It's just a matter of
right
the resonance pattern of whatever I'm tuning. It's like the words invoking, you know, I'm chanting these words, whatever, they're ringing there, and they create a reaction or a similar resonance for other people that they tune into.
But people can misunderstand words all the time, though. Like, I think that there's a certain – and Stephen King said the same thing. Stephen King wrote this book about – it's called On Writing, and he basically says, like, words are telepathy. If I'm talking about this, that, or the other, you see exactly what I had in mind. But, I mean,
yes,
like
– Yes, okay, so it's, yeah. Not, yeah, so it's not that uncommon of an idea. It's a pretty common idea then. Stephen King said it.
I think it's like too, like you said, it's so common that we don't like actually take a look at it. Like, I think mm-hmm. it's so easy for everyone to grasp. But see, somehow there's like a break because people don't listen to people all the time. Do you know what I mean? And I notice also like sometimes where when I really know what I'm talking about, I feel like there's like a connection with somebody. Like I'll get chill bumps. Or I can feel like my hair kind of growing or whatever. And that I'll see the other person like rub their arms or something. Or like when somebody's singing, like somebody's singing out loud and they get to this point where they actually know what they're singing about. And then it's like that message relays to you. That's what actually –
Oh,
not,
I see what you're saying.
You see what I'm saying?
Yeah, I didn't mean to interrupt. Yeah, go ahead.
No, you're not interrupting. The only other example I have is dancing. Like I've noticed that when people dance and there's like they hit a certain area of like understanding where they're actually connecting with the audience and whatever is going on inside is like relayed to the other person. So yeah, I know exactly what you're saying. I know that language is some kind of telepathy where we can relay information and that there's a connection. But I think my theory is that the reason humans learn it so quickly is because there's more of the connection between, like, say, the mother and the child. When the child is growing up and the mother says some words to him, and the actual thought of what's going on in her head outside of, like, the actual logistics of the language, you know what I mean? Like, there's something else being related that the child learns. But I think that there's a little bit of a miscommunication nowadays. Like, people miscommunicate because they don't understand that it has more to do with, like, the connection from person to person than the actual, like, language or words or movement of the tongue. Like, there's something else missing.
I feel like I could have a really strong connection with somebody, and they could say something, but I wouldn't understand it. And then maybe later I would understand it. And I'd say, oh, that's what they were saying.
Yes.
I never got it before. And I think there's a cliche that children, when they grow up, they think their parents are wrong about everything. And then at a certain age, they go back and they go, gosh, you know, and then all of a sudden they see it in a different way.
Yeah.
And they believe it. There was an odd, one other thing was that there was an autistic girl, or I guess what you would call a savant in India, and that she actually could read her mother's mind. In other words, she couldn't speak very well, but she could, you know, she would talk about what her mother, she would actually be able to read her mother's mind. And it was documented, this is like a year or something ago. And, so I think that could be true, that there could be a special bond between a child and a mother wherein they have a special communication. And people also believe that is true between a human and an animal. They have a special animal. Or
right.
If a mother is separated from a child, that they can have a communication over a distance. And I think the same is with a twin.
Yes, twins. Twin speech. They that the right, mm-hmm. right, exactly.
They have a different. They can make up their own language, and that only they know and stuff. And also, they share dreams, and they can have telepathy between them. And they know that it's real, but they can't tell anybody else because no one would believe them. But
right.
they experience it. So the other thing about this issue of how some language is stronger than other, I think, reminded me of this teaching that I also got from my tradition, which is that when you were saying about how people don't listen, and sometimes, you know, certain words have more power than others, or certain like dance movements might have more power than others. You can't exactly express why.
Right.
And just reminded me where what we were taught was that there's these different levels of speech, and the deepest speech comes from a different body, actually. They talk about there's different, there's the gross body, and then there's the, maybe, you know, what they call the subtle body, the astral body, and then there's the dark body that's like the heart, and then there's this other body that's inside that body, that's a hidden body. And that depending on from which level the speech comes from, it has a different effect. So I would love to listen more to this man. I think they're going to have the second podcast of Jan Erwin on the power of music. And this the man that he's interviewing, name's Otto something. He studied a tradition in classical Indian music. I studied a little bit of classical Indian music in a tradition myself. And one of the things is how, one of the things we're taught is that how there's certain compositions, there's certain musical ratios that are played in a certain way that really can cause physical effects. So that it could be like the rain dance of the Indians, or what we were taught was that it could, you know, you can use it can even be a weapon. It could start a fire, and, you know, it can bring rain and just different stuff like that, depending on the what they call the rag, which is the structure of this song. So anyway, I think I better go to sleep now, but anyway, it was great.
Oh,
and
Peg, it was good talking to you. It's amazing. Like, it's so many, I think that you kind of get a bad rap sometimes. I think people think that you're a negative person, and I completely think different of you right now. It's like, I think that this has been really refreshing for me, and it's a good thing. I don't know. I mean, I feel the same way. People kind of label me a conspiracy theorist, and I think even like maybe Doug thinks I'm a conspiracy theorist and stuff, but I just like keep all the plates spinning. Do you know what I mean? Like, I keep thinking about the possibility that I'm being tricked somehow, and that just leaves so much room open for like seeing the world in a different light. Do you know what I mean?
Well, I don't really, people don't want to be conspiracy theorists, you know, so that's fine. They don't have to be one. That's all. No big deal. I think that sometimes I feel that when people really attack me, or they really show a lot of anger, you know, in reality, what I've actually discovered and what can actually be proved, I mean, no bones about it, it's because they really know it's true inside, but they really don't want to have that material surface. If they really had no problem with it, and if it really wasn't true, then they wouldn't get so angry. You know, they wouldn't feel compelled to, like, try to prove you wrong when they don't even, you know, discuss the evidence. In other words, just by name calling or whatever. So it's really visceral. It really can come quick and fast, and anger, and it's a result of the pressure that has to be utilized to keep the material submerged. So that, and that's how I see it. It's like an energetic thing.
Wow.
So,
well, you have a very good night, okay? And take care of yourself.
Okay, bye for now, Will.
All right, until next time. Listening to Peg Carter on SyncBook Radio, a production of thesyncbook.com. More information about Peg can be found at Synchromysticism Forum. For more information about Peg's pottery, go to margverite.blogspot.com. I mispronounced it, but it's margverite.blogspot.com. And the Etsy store, Terra Pottery. That's T-E-R-R-E at the E-T-S-Y store. You can also follow Pearl Canter, that's C-H-A-N-T-E-R, on Facebook and follow her news feed. For more information about The Sync Book, our guest, to check out past shows, or to subscribe to the podcast via iTunes, please be sure and visit our website at thesyncbook.com. If you like this podcast and would like more, consider becoming a Sync Book Plus member. Some of the membership benefits include full access to the complete audio archives, discounts on books, behind-the-scenes scripts, bonus audio and video, as well as monthly online hangouts with the host. All this and more can be found at thesyncbook.com/membership. Thanks so much. And remember, the conscience of the world is so guilty that it always assumes that people who investigate heresies must be heretics, just as if a doctor who studies leprosy must be a leper.